It's been a pretty tough stretch of months. At times, it has felt to me like our country is coming apart at the seams. But underneath all that discord, I feel some hope, an impulse at least toward a more hopeful future. A lot is going right now, of course, and there's also an impulse toward a more connected and loving future. I listen to a podcast every week called The Run-Up. It's 20 minutes or so of really good reporting about the election through the New York Times. It's a deep dive into relevant aspects of the presidential campaign. The show is thoughtful and well-researched, and I look forward to it twice a week. A couple of weeks ago, they did an episode about political advertising and how it's changed over the years. They played some chipper jingles for Kennedy and Eisenhower that were clearly of another era. It was very sweet. They talked about how political advertising works and why there's so much negativity in it these days. But they signed off without mentioning my favorite ad of the season, that Bernie Sanders ad that went viral back in January. You might remember it. It contained images of people in various communities and then this fast mosaic of all kinds of American faces set to the tune of Simon and Garfunkel's song, America. The song begins,
"Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked off to look for America. Walked off to look for America."
Those songs, that song and those images touched me. In an age of cynicism, its aspirational message was refreshing. And it spoke to our need just now to find ourselves again, to remember what binds us, what connects us, to relearn mutual trust, maybe to learn it for the first time, and to reaffirm our shared commitment to the common good. We need one another, after all. We are, in the words of the Reverend Martin Luther King, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. We're all in this together. You might have heard this parable, which appears in many different religious traditions, versions of which appears in many religious traditions. A man approaches God one day and says, "I want to know what heaven and hell look like." God shows the man two doors. The man opens the first and looks in, and there inside he sees a large round table with a steaming pot of delicious stew in the center. The smell is amazing. Several people sit around the table holding very long spoons in their hands. But the people are gaunt and sickly. They're famished. They can reach into the pot with their spoons, but because the spoons are so long, when they bend their arms, they can't bring the food to their mouths. The scene is terrible. It's miserable. The man shudders and closes the door. That, says God, is hell. God opens the second door and the man peers in. The scene is almost identical, except the people inside are plump and happy and laughing. They sit around another wide circular table. They dip their long spoons into the pot of delicious stew in the center of the table, and then they lean forward and reach across and feed one another. This, says God, is heaven. The people in the second room have learned a basic skill. They've learned to share, to feed one another. They have learned that they are connected. This is how we make community. We share our resources, and we also share our humanity, receiving as we give. In his book, Tattoos on the Heart, Gregory Boyle shares a poem by the Sufi poet Hafiz. Boyle is a Jesuit priest who serves some of the poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods in Los Angeles. His work there is a labor of love. The poem is called "With That Sweet Moon Language." Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, "Love me." Of course you do not say this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this, this great pull in us to connect. Why not be the one who lives with a full moon in each eye, that is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear? Boyle began serving at Dolores Mission Church in the mid-1980s. The church is set between two public housing projects in a neighborhood ravaged by poverty and gang violence. Boyle and his parishioners respond to the crisis by launching a program to provide jobs and education. They open a bakery, which they call Homeboy Bakery, which gets a lot of media attention from the day it opens. At Homeboy, members of former rival gangs work together. They build relationships, and they find a path to a better life. The bakery is, in Boyle's words, a training program and a business, a work site and a community, all of it, all at once. He tells the story of Luis. Luis and Boyle know each other for 10 years before Luis comes to work at Homeboy. He's very smart. He's a drug dealer in town who never gets caught. And for a decade, Luis politely turns down jobs that are offered to him at the bakery. This goes on for 10 years, but then he becomes a dad. And everything changes for him once his daughter, Tiffany, is born. He goes to work for Homeboy and quickly ascends to a leadership position because of his natural talents. As I said, the bakery is well known. It's a well-known social enterprise with a lot of media attention, which means that since Luis has a position of, has a leadership role, part of his job is leading tours and talking with the media. So one day, Boyle and Luis stand in the parking lot watching as a scheduled tour rolls up. Luis hates this part of the job. He's griping to Boyle, making jokes about how all this feels a little too much like a zoo tour. Boyle waves cheerily at the visitors and wills Luis to pipe down. They're good friends. They understand one another. Luis has a question which he poses to Boyle. He wonders why their mostly white visitors use the word great so much when they tour the facility. He says, "Watch. This bunch of stroll in and see the place, and it's all firme and clean, and machines working proper, and they say, this place is great. And then they see the homies, enemies working together, and they say, you fellas are great. Then they taste our bread, and they go, this bread, it's great." He goes on to say bluntly, "I mean, why are white people always using the word great?" Boyle says he doesn't know, but proceeds to tell Luis he's great from then on, every chance he gets just to mess with him. Fast forward 4 months. Here's the rest of the story in Boyle's own words. "It's nearly closing time, and I arrive at the bakery in the evening. Luis sees me in the parking lot from inside the building and rushes outside. He's excited, even though enthusiasm is not ever the card with which Luis leads. He's too cool for that, but he barely lets me out of the car. 'Hey, G,' he says, 'you're not going to believe what happened to me yesterday after my shift.' He proceeds to tell me that after work, he goes to pick up his 4-year-old daughter, Tiffany, at the babysitter's. He puts her in his car, and they drive to their tiny apartment, where, for the first time, Luis is paying rent with honestly earned clean money. He unlocks the door, and Tiffany scurries in down the hallway and lands in their modest sala. She plants her feet in the living room and extends her arms and takes in the whole room with her eyes. She then declares with an untethered smile, 'This is great!' He tells me that he lowers himself to her eye level, placing his hands on her knees for support. 'What's great, mija?' Tiffany clutches her heart and gushes, 'My home!' Luis seems unable to speak at this moment. Our eyes find each other and our souls well up along with our eyes. We can't stop staring at each other and tears make their way south on our faces. After what seems like longer than I'm sure it was, I break the silence. I point to him. 'You did this. You never had a home in your life. Now you have one. You did this. You were the biggest drug dealer in town, and you stopped and baked bread instead. You did this. You've never had a father in your life, and now you are one. And I hate to have to tell you, but you're great. Boyle continues his story by addressing us, you and me. He says, I hate to have to tell you this, but the first time I retrieved this story from my memory bank was to tell it at Luis's funeral. He wasn't doing anything wrong on the Wednesday afternoon he was killed. He was loading the trunk of his car in the projects, readying himself for a camping trip. Two gang members with their face covered entered their enemy's territory looking for fool slipping. They saw Luis and must have thought to themselves, he'll do. They walked up to him and executed him. I told the great story at Luis's funeral largely because of the questions I had been repeatedly asked by his friends and homies during the week that spanned his death and burial. What's the point, they'd ask, of doing good if this can happen to you? And Boyle says, it was a question worthy of response. I told that packed church that Luis was a human being who came to know the truth about himself and liked what he found there. This became Luis's life work. He embraced his goodness, his greatness, and nothing was the same again. Today, we here at South Church gather food to share with our neighbors. We gather food to remember our own goodness and to work for the common good, to find and reconstitute our community and our country, to remember the ties that bind us together. We share our resources and we share our humanity, receiving as we give. Our fortunes are married. We're all in this together. May it be so. Amen. And now I invite you to rise in body or spirit and turn to one another, and join in singing our last hymn, number 131, Love Will Guide Us.
As we extinguish this chalice, take courage. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very, very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.
I invite you to reach out and have the hand of someone close for the benediction. May you go out into the day with the memory of these hands in your hands. May you go out into the day with the memory of this connection, this place of peace, this place of love. May you go in love this day, and may you go in peace. Giving and receiving, serving, and grateful for the ways in which you are served. May it be so. Amen.